නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ So as probably you can remember, we have started Moggallana Sanyutta, which is in the Sanyutta Nikaya, the connected discourses of the Buddha. Here, Venerable Moggallana is addressing the monks and he want to teach some lessons in a way. What has happened to him during his practice before he become the fully enlightened Arahant? So basically he want to explain how he went through certain difficulties and how Buddha has helped him. So likewise some interesting information is here. So he started with the first jhana, and he explained what is first jhana and how he has tried that, and then he end up with certain what we call the perceptions of the sensuality. Certain sensual thoughts have come in, creep in, and then Buddha intervene and ask him to not to be negligent in this practice. Maintain the mind carefully with the first jhana, and then he was able to accomplish that, and then he was able to make it completely perfect. That is the first jhana. And then later he actually, after being the Arahant, now he actually praised the Buddha and show his gratitude, telling that if anyone is to say that a particular monk has become really a great monk because of the help or the advice of the Buddha, then it is for myself that could be said, because Buddha has intervened and explained me what needs to be done, and I have followed that. I was able to make it perfect. Similarly, he explained the second jhana, how he tried that. And again, he went through certain faults, or we can say shortcomings, and the Buddha has noticed it. Buddha arrived there through his psychic powers and then instructed him, advised him. And similarly, again, Venerable Moggallana tried again and again and was able to make it perfect. Now he has perfected the second jhana. Similarly, he praised the Buddha after he became fully enlightened. Now then we discuss about the third jhana, where what is third jhana, and then how Venerable Moggallana tried that while being there, how he encountered certain shortcomings and that being noticed by the Buddha, and later Buddha arrived and instructed Venerable Moggallana not to be negligent, and later Venerable Moggallana was able to make the third jhana perfect. And again, he praised the Buddha, show his gratitude after he became an Arahant. Then we get on to the fourth jhana. Same thing has happened. He understood what is fourth jhana and now he is trying it. And but again, he made certain mistakes, certain shortcomings, and Buddha has noticed it. And again appeared in front of Venerable Moggallana and instructed him. Later, Venerable Moggallana was able to make it perfect. And similarly, he praised the Buddha, show his gratitude after he became fully enlightened. Now we can see in this jhana, first, second, third, fourth, these are particularly called as the material jhana or the rupa jhana, rupavachara jhana. Starting with certain five jhanic factors: vitakka, the applied mind; vichara, sustained mind; piti, rapture; sukha, happiness; ekaggata, the one-pointedness. Now these are the jhana factors based on what actually we determine what jhana the person is in. If one has all five jhana factors present, then we call it as first jhana. If there are, according to the sutta tradition, if there are only three jhana factors, means that vitakka and vichara are abandoned, then it is called the second jhana. And if rapture also abandoned, then we have only happiness and the ekaggata, the one-pointedness, then we call it as the third jhana. And even the happiness is abandoned and one resides in the complete equanimity with the one-pointedness, fair concentration, then we call it fourth jhana. So likewise, kind of a continuation is there. So typically it is one after the other that one would practice it. But after mastering, there may be a possibility that one can even play with it. You can jump at different jhana at your will and you can play with it. So that is sometimes certain experienced jhanic practitioners are capable of, but not an easy task. Now we can start with the other one, what we call Arupa Vachara Jhana. Now one has practiced the what we call the first, second, third, fourth, and now Venerable Moggallana is explaining, now he had an idea, while I was in seclusion, a reflection arose in my mind. What is this base of infinity, of space? Akasananchayatana. Akasananchayatanam, akasananchayatananti ucchati, kittanam, katanamku, katanannukho, akasananchayatananti. What is akasananchayatana? The base of infinity of space. And there he mentioned some interesting points. Then friends, it occurred to me, here with the complete transcendence of perceptions of forms, with the passing away of perceptions of sensory impingement, with non-attention to perceptions of diversity, aware that space is infinite. Now we are going to a different domain actually. We were in the materialistic domain. Now seeing certain issues, shortcomings in this materialistic domain, now one is trying to dwell in the immaterial domain. So we can see certain prominent features here. Complete transcendence of perceptions of forms. So that means sabbaso rupa sanyanam samatikkama. So different rupa sanya are there. Now when we are dealing in the kama loka, in this sensual world, so we can have various perceptions about our vehicle, about our house, about our say garden, maybe our hobby, maybe our pet, maybe our children, wife, husband. So all that, some material phenomena again and again pops up in our mind. So they are all, we can say, certain physical perceptions. I mean, we can say these are the physical objects. From those actually we are extracted certain perceptions, signs, and those again and again occupy our mind. Now that has to be abandoned when one is attaining entirely into this arupa realm. So there can't be any traces of the materiality world. So materiality has to be completely let go of. And then another thing is patika sanyanam atthangama. Now while we are in this material world, again certain impingements happen. Now say for example, when you see through while your eyes, so you various physical objects are something always come in line with our vision, because we are in some tangible world, we are in our physical world. So lot of impingements are there, physical impingements are there, forms, sights, sounds, smells, all those are there. So this impingements are very abundant, and the mind therefore sometimes get disturbed. Mind has these different kinds of occupancy, but that also has to be abandoned. When we are achieving this what we call the akasananchayata. So the mind has to be fully open. And it can't have any friction. It can't have any disturbances. That's another thing. And again it is mentioned, non-attention to perceptions of diversity. Nanatta sanyanam amanasikara. So different sanya are there, different perceptions are there, not only this physical objects and their perceptions, but even some mind-made perceptions, our own conventions, conceptual type of perceptions. So many, many things are there. But here, those actually produce some sort of diversity. Say you are jumping from one object to the other object, one perception to another perception, as we are continuously occupying our mind with various things. So it gets again and again colored, conditioned. Accordingly, we jump from one to the other. So kind of a diversity is there, very complex. But that complexity has to be completely wiped out. So the mind has to be very much like unified. So it has to have a simple, one prominent perception. So it is called oneness, oneness of the perception. Here we are non-attention to various perceptions. Now you come to a single perception. You merely has the perception of the space. That complete, open, boundless perception of the space. Now, ananto akasoti. So the space is infinite. So there is no any limit to the space. Now you know that the space is, you can't even comprehend. It is go on and on. There is no limit. Even in the three-dimensional space, I mean, there is no limit. So we are simply on the earth. But if we consider the space, space is everywhere. There is no limit. So now we are very much like training the mind to perceive or to maintain this space as our mental object. Again and again paying our attention to this infinite space. Infinite space. Infinite space. So every time we are conditioning the mind. Now in this Samatha meditation, it is not some sort of a vipassana based one. Rather, we are conditioning the mind. Rather than simply attached to any sensual phenomena or any materialistic phenomena, that all are to be abandoned. Now mind is programmed, mind is conditioned to open and simply be aware of complete, large, wide space, infinite space. And when it happens again and again, it will be succeeded. And now, as we can see from Venerable Moggallana, while he tried that, while I dwelt therein, perceptions and attention accompanied by forms assailed me. Now he was trying that, but still difficult. Still he encountered certain perceptions about the, say, materiality, certain forms, certain visuals, all that material world related phenomena, those perceptions appear in his mind. So it's a kind of a disturbance now. He couldn't make it perfect. So at that moment, Buddha, as usual, was watching him and quickly came to him through his spiritual powers. And then again, he is advising him. Moggallana, Moggallana, do not be negligent regarding the base of the infinity of space. Steady your mind in the base of the infinity of space. Unify your mind in the base of the infinity of space. Concentrate your mind in the base of the infinity of space. So Buddha advising Venerable Moggallana to make things perfect, and then he left, and later Venerable Moggallana was able to make it perfect. So again and again, after trying several times, then he was able to make things perfect. Now he being the foremost arahant, now he is explaining to the other monks, if one speaking rightly could say of anyone, he is a disciple who attained to greatness of direct knowledge with the assistance of the teacher. It is of me that one could write to say this. Now, as we discussed even the last time, we can see even these arahants, how grateful they are to the Buddha. So they have that very beautiful quality of gratitude. They can remember the past, how they were making certain mistakes and how Buddha came in front and advised them, and they acknowledge his teaching, accepted his advice, and accordingly they practice, and then now they were able to make things perfect. Still they remember how Buddha was helpful. And this is regarding the infinity of space. And similarly, now after another time, he want to get into the infinity of consciousness. So what is infinity of consciousness? That came to his mind. So what is this infinity of consciousness? Then he got the answer, like, by completely transcending the base of the infinity of space, aware that consciousness is infinite, infinite. Now, when we are trying to comprehend or cognize the infinite space, so that means there should be an infinite consciousness as well. Because in order to cognize infinite space, you need infinite consciousness. So this is the argument, actually. This is the logic. So the consciousness also has to be infinite. Otherwise, you can't comprehend the infinite space. Now, rather than paying attention to infinite space, now you are paying attention to this infinite consciousness. So you are again and again conditioning the mind, telling this consciousness is infinite. This consciousness is infinite. So accordingly, one may achieve the infinite consciousness, what we call the Vijnananchayatana. But as we can see what has happened to Venerable Moggallana, while he is there, still certain perceptions of the infinite space creeping in. Certain Akasananchayatana related perceptions are creeping in. They assailed him. Now that is being noticed by the Buddha. So Buddha appeared in front of him and he again advised Venerable Moggallana. Moggallana, Moggallana, do not be negligent regarding the base of the infinity of consciousness. Steady your mind in the base of the infinity of consciousness. Unify your mind in the base of the infinity of consciousness. Concentrate your mind in the base of the infinity of consciousness. So this is how he Buddha basically advised Venerable Moggallana. And at a later occasion, Venerable Moggallana was practicing diligently and was able to make things perfect. Now he is in the infinity of consciousness perfectly. There are no any discrepancies, there are no any kind of a shortcomings. He was able to make it perfect. Now, at this time, now he being the Arahant, now he is praising the Buddha, showing his gratitude, saying that Buddha has helped me like this. I followed his advice and was able to become a great monk. Now, at a later occasion, he want to practice nothingness, what we call the Akinchanyayatana. Now, what is Akinchanyayatana? Now, that is defined hereby completely transcending the base of the infinity of consciousness. Aware that there is nothing, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in the base of nothingness. Now this is also a little tricky area. Now this is not that you are trying to understand non-self. Rather, you are simply saying no phenomena. Nothing is there. Previously you have various objects, physical phenomena, material phenomena, but nothing is there available now. Nothing is there. It's kind of absence of phenomena. So this is what actually we encourage to the mind, program or condition to the mind, saying nothing is there. There is nothing. There is nothing. No object. So it's a kind of a conditioning process. It is not that you went through certain realization of say anatta, non-self, and understanding that every material, phenomena, objects are intrinsically they are empty, it is not that you are going through such kind of an understanding, vipassana-based understanding. Rather, we are simply saying objects are not there, they are absent. So this is samatha practice we are talking here. So you might achieve this nothingness, akinchanyayatana, but as we can see what happened to Venerable Moggallana, so while he is trying that, while he is dwelling there, certain perceptions accompanied by the infinity of consciousness creep in. Those assailed him. Now Buddha has noticed that and appeared in front of Venerable Moggallana and again advised him, don't be negligent, you got to be perfect here. So concentrate your mind properly and unify your mind in the base of nothingness and steady your mind in the base of nothingness. So basically Buddha wants to make his disciple Venerable Moggallana a perfect one. So he is advising him. He is again and again looking at him, how he is doing things. Now here again Venerable Moggallana accepted Buddha's advice and then trying again and again, and ultimately he was able to make things perfect. Now he is perfectly dwelling now in the nothingness, no disturbances and no perceptions coming from the previous jhana, arupa jhana, that is the infinite consciousness. It is not there at all. Now he is perfectly with the nothingness. Later again, he being the arahant now, he is saying, okay, it is for me if someone has to say that one monk has become a great monk who is with the direct knowledge, that is for me because I was helped by the Buddha, advised by the Buddha, directed by the Buddha. Then at another occasion, now after he is mastering akinchanyayatana, nothingness, he now want to go further. He want to attain neva sanya na sanyayatana. Now here again he is popping up what's the definition of neva sanya na sanyayatana. Hereby completely transcending the base of nothingness, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in the base of neither perception nor non-perception. This is called the base of neither perception nor non-perception. Not much detail are here. So the idea is that the perceptions are some sort of a problem. Perceptions. Now you have perceptions about the country, perceptions about the children, perceptions about your husband, wife, politicians, your own self, and perceptions regarding various material phenomena. So our minds are full of various perceptions, various signs. So one may have understood, okay, these perceptions are really a burden to the mind. So how about not having any perception? Then you might understand, one might understand, okay, not having any perception is also not the correct thing. Then you become completely insane. And you need some sort of a perception as well. So that is how these people are trying to come to a kind of an in middle. It is not complete absence of perceptions. And again, it is not complete presence of perceptions. Kind of a in between. You are not having a full perception, but it is not complete absence of perceptions either. And these are actually some of the practices. Not that you understood the arising and passing away or any other proper characteristics, true nature of the perceptions. Rather, you want to get rid of perceptions in one hand. And there, on the other hand, you understand having no perceptions at all also is not the a sensible thing. So you need something also. Now you come to a middle, neither perception nor non-perception. So that is the argument, that's the logic behind this neva sanyana sanyayatana. And once you are trying to achieve it, this Venerable Moggallana, what has happened to him, a certain perceptions of nothingness came in, nothingness creeped in. That is being noticed by the Buddha. Again, Buddha came through spiritual powers, and then he again advised Venerable Moggallana, do not be negligent regarding the base of neither perception nor non-perception. Steady your mind in the base of neither perception nor non-perception. Unify your mind. Concentrate your mind. Again and again Buddha advised him. So accordingly Venerable Moggallana practiced at a late occasion, and he was able to accomplish it. Now he is perfectly in the neither perception nor non-perception. Neva sanya na sanyayatana. He can do it perfectly now. Actually, you know that the Venerable Moggallana, being the foremost in the psychic powers, so he has to cover all the 8 jhana. So all Ashtasamapatti, sometimes we call it Ashtasamapatti, all 8 jhanas has to be mastered. Not mere application, not mere absorption, but he has to master them. So this mastering of jhana is not an easy task. So Venerable Moggallana was able to accomplish it. And as a result of that, he was able to become a great monk, a foremost in the direct knowledges, abhinya, and he was even to make many different miracles. So all those were possible because he practiced the jhanas thoroughly, the samatha practice thoroughly. Now we can get on to another line, what we call the signless. Now, so far what we have discussed are entirely samatha based. Now, Venerable Moggallana is teaching us what is signless, which is vipassana. So, signless concentration is a product of vipassana. Now, you can't merely have signless unless you understand the basic principles of vipassana, particularly the universal characteristics. Now, according to the commentary, if one knows thoroughly about the impermanent nature, the transient nature of phenomena, that leads to signless. On the other hand, if one has thorough understanding about the dukkha, unsatisfactoriness, it leads to what we call appanihita, desireless. And if one is thorough in the non-self, anatta, it leads to emptiness or sunyata. So these are typically called as the opening to the Nibbana or doors to the Nibbana, vimokkha mukha. So anyway, the practice of vipassana is essential for this to achieve. You can't merely practice jhana and achieve it. So if you are trying samatha pubbangama vipassana, that means you first attain jhana, and then if you want to practice vipassana, so while in the jhana you can't do it, you need to emerge from the jhana. And different ways now you are trying to see the shortcomings of the jhana. The jhana itself has to be considered as a kind of impermanent, transient, conditioned, it is dependently arisen. You have to maintain certain intention. So all that are certain shortcomings of the jhana. So likewise, one has to practice vipassana based on the jhana, around the jhana. Then only you may be able to, even in the samatha pubbangama vipassana, one can get on to the signless. On the other hand, other practices like, say, elements meditation, if you are practicing in kayanupassana level, you can see how elements are quickly arising and passing away, their characteristics are appearing and disappearing again and again. So that transient nature, one may be able to understand. So that leads to understand the impermanence, transience of the material phenomena. It can avoid this very transient, very rapid arising and passing away, makes us unable to capture the signs. Now, you know that if we want to capture a sign, if you want to record a sign, some sort of a characteristics of any phenomena, so that phenomena has to stay permanently at least for a while. But when our faculties are well developed, one may understand, okay, these phenomena are not staying for a while. I mean, they are utterly transient. They are quickly arising and passing away. You can't have any marks now. You can't have any signs now. You can't pick any signs now. What is its color? What is its taste? What is its shape? None of them are able to grasp, because they are quickly arising and passing away, quickly arising and passing away. So that is where the one becomes unable to capture the signs. Signs are essential part for us to establish our consciousness, to grasp and to continue the suffering. So signs are one essential part. But here what happens? So as our mind is well refined, concentration is, and this mindfulness is well refined, very sharp, you are able to precisely maintain attention to many different phenomena. And not only that, you see their true behavior, their true nature, how quickly they are arising and passing away. So more and more mind starts comprehending that it is unable to capture the signs. It's unable to capture its color or shape or whether their name, label, none of them are possible. So the mind is completely unable to capture the signs. It let go of the whole thing, give up the whole thing and get liberated. So such things actually is the first way of making the mind free. So typically what happens is we are picking the signs and we think things are permanent. They are there. They exist. I can hold on. I can grasp. I can establish myself. I can call them as belong to me. Or simply I can say they are mine, or this is myself. So likewise what happens is we perceive some sort of a permanence. That's a kind of a what we call sanya vipallasa, a type of a distortion, inversion. So we can't understand the permanence, anicca nicca sanya. So even though they are utterly transient, we are unable to understand it. Instead, we see them as permanent. But when one is practicing vipassana thoroughly, again and again, so you come to a state, you understand this transience. They are coming and going very quickly. Now, whether their color or shape or whatever other characteristics is, are unable to capture. As a result of that, what happens? Mind lets go of everything, give up everything and get freed. Then it is called signless concentration. Now we can see when Venerable Moggallana trying to achieve it, and what happened was my consciousness followed along with signs. Now certain signs again appear in his mind. Now he want to have complete clarity in the mind, complete absence of the signs. But what happened here, time to time, signs are creeping in. So those may be materialistic signs, or those may be some immaterialistic signs. So many subtle signs again and again appear in his mind. So that is being noticed by the Buddha. Now Buddha appear in front of Venerable Moggallana and asking him, steady your mind in the signless concentration. And you should not be negligent in this signless concentration. And you need to make it perfect. At a later occasion, Venerable Moggallana was able to make it perfect. And then he was able to become the full enlightened Arahant. And now he is actually showing his gratitude to the Buddha, saying that Buddha actually has helped him and showed him the path And based on that, he was able to become the fully enlightened Arahant. And that is for him, it is rightly can be said that a monk has achieved a full enlightenment, has become a great being with the help of the teacher. So it is for me, it can be said. Now, there are various areas actually I like to further explain here, and we'll take this same topic next week also, because signless concentration is a very, very important one. Now, we have discussed about the jhana, but now we are entirely in the vipassana domain. So previously, Venerable Moggallana was practicing samatha, but now he is practicing vipassana. There are also certain mistakes have happened. Now Buddha came in front and advised him. So this signless concentration. Now, signless concentration and signless liberation of mind are two things. So what one achieve at the beginning is called animitta samadhi, animitta cheto samadhi. It is fragile and it is changing, it is conditioned, and it is very limited. And it is still, one needs to practice more and more. Ultimately, one may achieve the complete openness of the mind, boundless animitta samadhi. We specially giving a name, animitta cheto vimutti, a liberation of the mind through signless. Now, a fair amount of information we need to find out here from various suttas. Just for today, I am taking one interesting explanation coming in the Chulasunyata Sutta, which is quite relevant here. And Chulasunyata Sutta available in the Majjhima Nikaya 121. Now here also actually in the Chulasunyata Sutta, the order is like you are abandoning various signs. You had many signs related to the city, about the garden, about the population, about the advertisements, about the many things were there. Now you come to a monastery, all those unnecessary, burdensome, manifold perceptions are abandoned. Now still you have certain perceptions related to the monastery. Suppose you are going for a retreat. By the way, you were dwelling in the city, but you take a break and you went for a retreat. And when you are at the retreat, you are not supposed to use your phone, you are not supposed to read any newspapers, watch movies or TV, news, etc. Now slowly you abandon all that signs. You are trying to restrict yourself to the monastery environment, retreat environment. And what happened is, so we are reducing the signs. So number of signs that mind is going through are now reduced. Instead you have some less signs. Now later you start practicing, say, mindfulness. Now what we do, we are trying to be aware of the body. So when you are aware of the body, that means four phenomena, four elements are there. So all other external phenomena now you have to abandon. All other perceptions related to the external phenomena you got to abandon. Now only you have very limited perception related to the body. Again a reduction of perceptions, reduction of signs. Now assume that you are paying attention to a particular phenomena, say only the patavi dhatu, hardness. Say you are only perceiving that now, all other three phenomena are abandoned. All other perception related to the three elements are abandoned because you are utterly paying attention to one element, maybe the earth element. That's all. So again, a reduction of perceptions are there, signs are there. So you are fairly narrowed down your domain of perceptions. Now, likewise, we can see one can slowly abandon signs. But that is not enough. So this one can even, fair amount of practice is necessary to completely let go of the signs. Mere reduction is also not enough. By going through such a strategy ultimately, you see, what you are focusing is also transient. Assume that you are paying attention to earth element. You see, all the earth element characteristics is utterly transient. They are quickly changing, quickly arising and quickly passing away, quickly as appearing and then disappearing. So you may reach an area, so you can't find out what is the exact element currently operating. So different elements are there, they are in utter rapid transience. Now you can't recognize what is the exact element. Either it is earth element or air element or heat element, you can't find out, you can't label it because it is so transient. There what happened, as we discussed, so not being able to grasp the signs, so mind get liberated temporarily for a short while. At the beginning actually you might not even notice it, but later as a result of the practice you start noticing it. Okay, something is happening, I am practicing Vipassana, I am understanding the impermanence more and more. So things are disappearing quickly. I can't even notice them. I can't even trace what they are. I can't label them. So things are quickly disappearing. So ultimately, you come to an understanding, okay, something is happening in the mind. So mind has let go of everything. Mind becomes something like blank. Everything erased. No perceptions in the mind. No signs in the mind. It's very much like a clear glass. Previously there were many stains, there were many marks in the glass. But when you apply a very good, say, glass cleaner, okay, it became complete transparent. Okay, something like that. So your mind also become complete transparent. No stains, no signs, no marks. So you can see through. It's a very clear mind. So you may achieve that clarity of the mind, a perfect clarity of the mind, but still short time. Now this practice, we can say we are still in the what we call animitta cheto samadhi, animitta samadhi, the signless concentration. Now there are some interesting vipassana point of related ideas here. Yankopana kinchi Ayampi ko animitto cheto samadhi abhisankato abhisanchetaito. This signless concentration is also a conditioned state, and it is volitionally produced. You need a volition to produce it. So you are practicing vipassana, so that is the volitionally paying attention to various phenomena and understanding that. So you have to do it purposely, and then you achieve this signless concentration, but still it is fragile. The moment that you pick another sign, so that means your signless state became somewhat fragile. So still it is impermanent. But you are practicing that fragility or this understanding, how quickly this is also being broken, and you are using it to understand even its impermanence. So even the signless concentration is impermanent. So there are again and again certain thoughts creep in, or signs creep in, maybe feelings creep in, and again you pick the signs of those feelings. So you get certain disturbance. Now actually understanding these disturbances, their interruption, and these disturbances are also coming and going, they are also arising and passing away, this is actually the further continuation of the practice. Now you are further and further expanding your practice. So mind become wider and wider. Previously you had a signless concentration only to a very limited area, and again to a very shorter time. But now you are practicing vipassana, further and further you are broadening your understanding, expanding your understanding. So the area that you are maintaining as signless also become broader and broader, and the defilements are also become weaker and weaker. And here Buddha mentioned, so this practice helps to abandon the asavas, influxes. So he understands. So as he continues to practice it, kama asava is abandoned. The signless concentration of mind is conditioned, and he understood it's also volitionally produced, and he understood its impermanence and the phenomena's impermanence. So this further practice has to abandon the taint of sensual desire, kamasava, the taint of being, bhavasava, the taint of ignorance, avijjasava. Now the all three asavas are now slowly abandoned, and ultimately one become an arahant. All the asavas are abandoned. Now according to this sutta, this Sulasundata sutta, now after one becomes an arahant, so Buddha explains here, ye asu daratha kamasavam paticca te ida na santi. So there were certain, disturbances coming because of the taint of sensual desire. So we are trying to make things perfect, but still the sensual desires are popping up. As a result of that, certain perceptions of the sensual desire are popping up. Say, while you are practicing, you remember your house again. You remember your car again. You remember your fiancé or fiancée again. You remember your children again, husband again, wife again. Now, these are all related to the sensual desires. But rather than promoting it, feeding it, what we do is slowly let it go. So that means that we are reducing the sensual desire, the taint of sensual desire. Ultimately, it may be completely abandoned. So here now we are talking about an arahant, kinasava. So he is one who is completely abandoned the asavas, and there he understood, okay, now mind is free from any asavas. A taint of sensual desire is not there. Similarly, taint of being is not there. Taint of ignorance is not there. And later, he further understand, sunyamidang sanyagatang pamasavenati pajanati. Kamasava related, sensuality related, signs, perceptions are not appearing in the mind anymore. Bhavasava related, signs are not appearing in the mind anymore. Avijjasava related signs not appearing in the mind anymore. It has become perfectly cleaned, perfectly purified. And here Buddha mentioned in this sutta, okay, this is the maximum. Yathabuccha avipallatta parisuddha paramanuttara sunyata vakkanti bhavati. Dasananda, this is the genuine, undistorted, pure descent into voidness, supreme and unsurpassed. Ultimately, you come to the voidness, that means the sunyata. You started with signless, it has grown and grown and grown. You achieve the signless liberation as well, complete opening of the mind through signlessness. And at the same time, it is ended up with the voidness, so nothing is there in the mind now. There is no person, there is no being, individual, all that is also abandoned. Because avijjasavi is also abandoned. So things are happening very much like concurrently. Now this is a very, very profound sutta and an area that we all need to practice. Even though I am teaching you, I am not an arahant. So this is the path, by the way, we all have to follow. So Buddha has very clearly give us indications, instructions here. And various few more suttas I like to take up related to the signless concentration. And interestingly, here also Buddha mentioned, even though sensual desire is not there, taint of being is not there, taint of ignorance is not there, but still little non-voidness is there, still something is present. That is, you are still living, so there may be little disturbance coming from the sixth sense basis. So it is not some sort of an unconscious state. You may feel the body, you may feel certain disturbance coming through the senses, but mind is free from all the taints of sensual desire, taint of being, taint of ignorance. So those asava related disturbances are no more at all. Those are utterly wiped out. Even though some bodily issues are there, that is because of this living body. So you have achieved what we call sopadisesa parinibbana. So the arahant, while he is living, so he achieved the sopadisesa parinibbana, because still the body is living. Certain part of aggregates are still functioning. So you may still feel the friction coming to those aggregates. Only one attains the final parinibbana, you make the things perfect. Okay, with that, I like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session, and now I open the session for questions.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Bhante, do you have any questions from your side?
No. Today, actually, I am alone. I am residing at Aswatha today. Aswatha Monastery, and so I, Venerable Dhamma Vijita is in the Nisarnavanaya, so there is no one here.
Very good. So I don't see any questions apart from one written question, so maybe I can talk about that. And if there are any other questions for others, they can raise their hands as well.
Right.
Most respected Bhante, first of all, I would like to pay my great gratitude to Bhante on teaching on this wonderful, interesting Dhamma sermons today. I wish to know, while practicing elements meditation, is it required to give more attention to impermanence of the vibration of the elements to get the experience of animitta, or is it coming naturally? Please advise, Therwan Saranai.
I mean, it usually comes naturally, and that is the advice typically given by the teachers. So let it happen naturally, because it is not that by force you are trying to make things. Rather, what we do is simply noticing the characteristics of the elements. So, say, as we all know, that the earth characteristics, hardness, softness, roughness, smoothness, heaviness, lightness, say heat characteristics, hot and cold. So likewise, I mean, these things are again and again we are trying to comprehend, but naturally mind will notice, okay, they are changing, they are quickly disappearing, they are quickly coming and going. So that is a noticeable characteristics as we further, you know, moving forward. So therefore it will happen naturally, that the transition from individual characteristics to the universal characteristics, common characteristics. You can read this, the book by Sayadaw Upandita, the book Paving the Way. So there he has beautifully summarized. Okay, you should first have the understanding about the private characteristics, individual characteristics, which is private to the particular element. You know the earth characteristics, you know the water characteristics, you know the, say, the heat characteristics, air characteristics. Now, that understanding then leads to the Sankata Lakkhana. Sankata Lakkhana is even just before the universal characteristics. Sankata means conditioned phenomena, conditioned characteristics. All conditioned phenomena are showing some sort of three characteristics. Upado panyayati, vayo panyayati, ritasa anyatattam panyayati. Everything is subject to arising and passing away and unstoppable changing. From the moment it arises, it is driving towards the end or passing away, through going through a change. Now this is in between. Now as you continue looking at like that, there you end up with the impermanence, unsatisfactoriness and unself, the universal characteristics. So it's a kind of a natural transition happening between our understanding. So let it happen naturally, therefore.
Very good. Thank you, Bhante. Are there any follow-up questions for that? Okay. I have one question. I was just thinking during your deliberation here. Bhante, it talks about on the 8th, which is the basis of neither perception nor non-perception. So the way that I on the seventh one, you talk about nothingness, These are the formation of mind. You know, you don't see any type of you may call this sanya, right? And the person.
No,
the
no,
nothingness,
no, no, no. Nothingness.
Isn't it, also.
Nothingness still has a perception. No, these are very tricky areas actually. So nothingness.
Nothingness also have. Okay, I got it. No.
Yeah, nothingness.
I was wondering for you to get to this. The nothingness is basically the emptiness, but that is not the case.
No, no, no.
That's
no.
What I'm.
No, there are, you have the perception of nothing. Nothing is there. Nothing is there is another perception. You assume that you assume that your room had a beautiful flower vase. That's the only thing you had. Now you remove that flower vase. And now you say it is empty of flower vase. Nothing is there now. Nothing is there now. Nothing is there now. So, I mean, these are conceptual objects we are talking here. In the samatha, we are still talking of conceptual objects. Those are maybe material objects or mind-made objects. Or we have given names to them. And these are conventional objects. Conventional objects. Say flower vase. Flower vase is a conventional object. A clock is a flower, a conventional object. Say you have a beautiful garland. Oh, it's a conventional object, conceptual object. Now, when we take them out, okay, all those objects are not there. So that is the idea of nothingness. But in Vipassana, we understand, okay, those are names. And that is why we are directly coming to the elements level. We are touching the elementary characteristics. Not being driven by the names given by the humans or values, judgments given by the humans. So we are coming to the very root level, very primary level, and we are directly dealing with the elements. There you practice Vipassana by seeing their transient nature, impermanent nature and all that, then you may come into the what we call the signless, and that's a different track, by the way.
Very good. Thank you very much, Bhante. So there are two hands that have been raised. I think Nandana was first, so I will give him the opportunity to unmute and ask your question, please.
Thank you, Vishan. Thank you, Bhante, for teachings today. Almost all the four jhanas that you described today, Bhante, like, they're almost really over my head. I don't think I did anything of those. And I'm also, I think, so I'm trying to understand, like, you as you explained in this sutta, how Venerable Moggallana came to the eighth dhyana, and then from there he went on to signless.
Actually,
state, right?
Now that is not exactly mentioned like that, whether he practiced Samathapubbanga Vipassana, where he achieved all eight jhana and then did the Vipassana and then achieved the signless. So that's a little doubtful. By the way, that is also a given path. You achieve the jhana and then get into the Vipassana. That's also a given path. A possible path explained by the Buddha. Probably Venerable Moggallana also has followed that. I mean, maybe, most probably. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm trying to understand this. I think I'm biased because I don't understand this four arupa jhanas that you explained.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm trying to put all my understanding based and trying to fit them all into the Satipatthana practice.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So when you really listen to this sutta, Bhante.
Yeah.
Now starting with the first jhana, where vitakka vichara, piti sukha, ekagata are present. They are present as mental factors. Buddha has not given any instructions, when I say instructions, the methodology, to get into these jhanic states, right? I mean, in this sutta, there are no instructions as to how you can attain these different jhanic states. Are there any other suttas where Buddha has specifically given instructions and said, okay, if you do this and when you do this, you will attain these jhanic states?
No, and the thing is very much like during those days, so these are known things. But for us, it is kind of alienated, foreign. But those days, actually, not only to the Buddha and the disciples, but even to the others, those are available. So that's so very common. That's very well known. So what are the methods to achieve them? How to arrive them? Well, a fairly a common thing. That's why you know that when the Buddha to be the Bodhisattva was finding the teaching, so he went to Alara Kalama. He had the third Arupa Jhana. Nothingness was the ultimate that he had. Then he went to Uddakaramaputta and he had all eight jhana. He taught him the Nevasanya, Nasanyayatana. So therefore, the point is, it is very much like a known thing during those contemporary times. And I feel that may be the reason that Buddha didn't spend much time to teach each and every way how to achieve it. But on the other hand, if you refer certain books like Path of Purification, Visuddhi Magga, so fair amount of information are there how to achieve Arupa Jhana and all that. Because you can't do Arupa Jhana using Anapanasati like that. You need what we call the Kasina meditation to achieve Arupa Jhana. So fair amount of information is there in the Visuddhi Magga. So like certain meditation books fairly explain more detail about the attainments to the jhanas.
Oh, okay. So it is probably very well known at that
exactly.
time then.
Yes.
Jhanic practice.
Correct.
And then I have another question, Bhante. Now, the when you are explaining the first jhana, the vitakka vichara at the level of first jhana.
Mm-hmm.
Now, vitakka vichara is not actually having thoughts in the mind, but it's rather the knowing of the in breath and out breath. Is that a correct understanding?
To some extent. Now, vitakka vichara, as you said, not at all thoughts at the mind. Rather, you are
right.
Applying your mind to a particular object. That object also has to be a fairly refined object. Now, say for example, breathing is a subtle object, a refined object. Again and again, you are applying your mind to that object. It is not a thinking type of a mind, rather a silent mind.
Right.
So you are
just knowing.
Knowing part is actually the vichara.
Okay.
Actually, vitakka is merely you are putting your mind onto the object, and then only you know it. That is the vichara.
Okay, so that's a word. What's the word that is used in the Anapanasati? Is it the word pajanati, Pante?
We can say so. Yes. Pajanati.
Okay.
Now, the point is here, also some tricky area. Now, to what extent we need to know the object? Now, if we are going too deep and too penetratively, we are trying to recognize very subtle characteristics, then we are moving towards the vipassana. But here in the samatha, rather than doing so, you need to softly, superficially touch the object without going too deeper details.
Okay.
In the jhanic practice.
Last week I asked this question about the upeka,
mm-hmm.
Or equanimity that is experienced in the second jhana versus the upeka in the Bojjhanga Dhamma. And Bhante, you explained that there is a difference.
Mm. Actually, in the fourth jhana.
I have been
upekkha in the fourth jhana.
Yeah, fourth jhana. Sorry, yes. Upekkha in the fourth jhana. And you explain the difference, that there is in fact a difference. And I have been kind of contemplating on that. And several times when I sat in meditation, I tried to be aware of that exact that flavor of the mind when I'm having an equanimous state of mind, after doing Vedananupassana and going into Chittanupassana and experiencing the mind and that state. But it struck me suddenly that in the first jhana, as you explained, there is piti. In addition to vitakka vichara, there is piti and sukha.
Yeah.
And then in addition to piti and sukha, then there's concentration or ekaggata.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And then it kind of dawned upon me, okay, piti, sukha and ekaggata are also bojjanga dhamma, three bojjangas.
correct.
Right?
Yes.
So I was thinking because I don't know whether I have ever been to a jhana or anything, but I practice the satipatthana. That is my usual regular practice.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, okay, where is this? How does this? How are they different? Because you can definitely get the flavor of piti and sukha and ekaggata, and they are very distinct kind of states, and they kind of proceed from one to the other, and it is very clearly something that one can experience, realistically experience, and nothing like those arupa jhanas or anything, right?
Yeah.
So I was thinking, wow, this is the there are three of those bojjhangas in the first jhana also. So and then it I was thinking, okay, Buddha's instructions on meditation, if you look at these two suttas, the Anapanasati Sutta and the Satipatthana Sutta, both the suttas give us a methodology. We do something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when we do them, when we follow those instructions, then we experience these states of mind that Buddha is describing.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the Anapanasati Sutta, what we are actually experiencing are the different states of the Satipatthana Sutta, like Kayanupassana, Vedananupassana, Dhammanupassana, and Chittanupassana. So I was wondering whether there is some kind of a connection or an overlap between this jhanic practice and also at least the first four jhanas and the Satipatthana practice. Do you have any comments, Pante, about it?
Yeah, I feel that point is now in the Satipatthana Sutta, a fair emphasis is given to the Vipassana side. Say samudaya dhammanu passīvā kāyasmin viharati, vaya dhammanu passīvā kāyasmin viharati. So where emphasis is there to see their true nature, arising and passing away. So that is more towards the vipassana. But in the jhānic practice, we are still at the conceptual level. There is a conceptual object. Say a beautiful conceptual object. And you like to be with it. And the hindrances are abandoned. And this beautiful object is now producing some happiness. Niramisa piti, unworldly kind of happiness. And this happiness and the happiness that you may experience during the Satipatthana practice are of two different flavors. It is true, it is happiness, but two different flavors. Now, in the Samatha practice, you are dealing with the conceptual objects and you are abandoning the hindrances. Still, you gain the happiness. But in the Satipatthana practice, you are understand their true nature. It is also not the conceptual objects. You come to a fairly a fundamental level, a very primary level. And there you understand the impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, all that. Still produce some happiness. It is more into the wisdom side. Wisdom generated type of happiness is there in the Vipassana, in the Satipatthana. So therefore, it is true that, as you said, it is also happiness, here also happiness, but the flavors are different.
Right. So in the Satipatthana practice, it is more like realization of these characteristics that make us happy, or that produces that state of mind, right?
Correct.
Whereas in the Samatha, it is a different one, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Bhante. Yeah, that's. I was kind of wondering after the last week's discussion. I contemplated on that. I was thinking whether there is any difference or not. Okay. And also, Bhante, now in Satipatthana practice also, we can experience that. I don't know whether you can call it signless, but to my understanding, it is a signless kind of an experience where your mind does not, you know, park on any object for more than a fraction of a second.
Correct.
Like a noise or a sound or a smell or feeling, it just keeps moving without you know, parking on that object, like
correct,
without getting into that object.
Correct.
So whether could you describe that also as a signless?
Definitely.
Signless.
Yeah, it is the beginning.
Okay.
Yes, it is the beginning of the signless concentration. That's why the signless is entirely a vipassana based product. It is not a samatha based product. So it's a vipassana based product. So it's a vipassana samadhi. So there you come to an understanding. Now see the difference between nothingness and signless. Now one can argue, okay, nothingness is equal signless. It is not. You know, in the samatha practice, nothingness is where the conceptual objects are not there. You still have some idea about the conceptual object. So I have my father, I have my brother, I have my sister, my children, say my flower garden and all that. So now you are still with these conceptual objects, and now you take them out all away from your mind, and now you say nothing is there. No objects are there. So that is one level of understanding in the samatha, nothingness. But in the signless, as you correctly mentioned, so you go through a proper vipassana practice and you understand their true nature, and since they are quickly arising and passing away, now mind is unable to capture any signs because they are quickly, rapidly arising and passing away. That is their true nature. That is their intrinsic characteristic. You understand their true nature. As a result of that, now mind is unable to find the signs, marks, any pivotal points. And now it gives up everything. It becomes liberated. It becomes completely released. Now we call it as signless.
Right. Okay, Bhante. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next question, Darshika, you can unmute yourself and ask your question.
Thank you. Bhante, I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yes.
The question is, I just want to know, I'm a bit confused, what is meant by experiencing death before real death occurs. Is it real related to this sopa, this nibbana?
What do you mean?
What is meant by experiencing death before you really die?
Experiencing death. Experiencing death before the death. Are you asking like that?
Yes.
I didn't mention something like that anyway.
No. I have heard Reverend Dhammajiva praises you can not. I don't know how to explain it. So is there anything like that is there anything related to that sort of thing?
Probably you can come to something called Nirodha Samapatti. So that is still has some difference between Nirodha Samapatti and the death. A fair information is available in the Chula Vedala Sutta. You can read that, where Venerable Dhammadinna is comparing the death and the Nirodha Samapatti. Other than that, I mean, by the way, Nibbana is called deathless. It is not the death, it is deathless Nibbana. Amata Dhatu, Amata, the deathless element.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Bhante. Therwan Sarnai.
Yeah, Therwan Sarnai. Okay.
So, Bhante, those are the only questions
okay, fine.
We have.
Okay, then we'll wind up the session.
Have any other questions?
Okay then, fine. So we'll wind up the session. We have spent a fair amount of time in discussing the Dhamma as well as in the listening to Dhamma and short practice. So whatever the accumulated merits, we'll share with all the celestial beings, all with our past relatives and whoever in need of merits. We wish these merits help us also to understand Buddha's teaching and practice it to the best of our ability and to attain path fruition Nibbana. We'll recite the traditional verses. එතාවතා ච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සම්බේ දේවා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පatti සිද්ධියා එතාවතා ච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සම්බේ භූතා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පatti සිද්ධියා එතාවතා ච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සම්බේ සත්තා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පatti සිද්ධියා ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහින්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහින්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහින්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම් පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු